Okay. Hey, folks, and welcome back to the QS Cast. Tarkan and I joining you. What's up, Tark?
Good morning, buddy. How you doing?
Good morning. Good morning, insiders. Good morning, everyone else. Yeah, we're back. It's been a fresh off the Pro Tour. We have a few things to talk about. Not going to recap the Pro Tour, but Tark and I have a few insider submitted questions that we wanted to address on this episode of the QS Cast. I think they're really good questions. We appreciate that because it always gives us something to talk about in this. It's kind of like a weird time because we're fresh off the Pro Tour. We don't really have, like, Battle Bond is releasing today. As we're recording this, and we're just kind of in that limbo period of, we haven't really seen anything from Core 19. I'm not even really super excited about Core 19, to be honest with you. I think there's going to be obviously some stuff that's going to be worth talking about, and we always have a good time and, really, valuable information when it comes to any set release, especially in this Discord. But we're just kind of in that limbo period. So we appreciate all the user submitted questions.
Yeah. I have to admit, it was one of the more unexciting Pro Tours for finance.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, we talked about this before the Pro Tour, but kind of a lot of the, I don't want to say the format had been solved, but a lot of the cards that were going to be expensive kind of already were expensive. And again, as I mentioned, I did a blurb in the chat before the Pro Tour, and I know Chaz, you talked about this too, but it's like, one of the main issues with Dominaria was Dominaria's box EV is already really high and it hasn't dipped really that much. And there's not much more money that can be pulled from Dominaria, because as soon as the box EV goes up too high, then the box start getting cracked and it brings it back down. So there wasn't too much opportunity for Dominaria. And there was a couple of, I had a couple of calls that I remember. I was thinking Vraska, and I think Vraska did show up at the Pro Tour, but it wasn't strong enough to end up becoming anything that was really meaningful. But Teferi blew it out of the water, as we, as we kind of predicted, and as most people predicted. And Karn did his thing, and but those cards were already really expensive. Like, all the major players that we expected to see showed up. So,
yeah.
It was tough.
There's a lot of different factors, especially for this Pro Tour, and there's some that we can expect to see in every Pro Tour, but I think in this particular Pro Tour, when we had that. We talked about that supply kind of, there wasn't enough supply to meet demand, at least initially. I think it's kind of getting to where it needs to be now. But we still get, reports fairly, not as common, but it's still pretty common that stores can't keep Dominaria in stock. It's just getting bought up as frequently as it's getting stocked. So it was definitely a really, popular set, especially one of recent memory. There was just a lot of powerful cards in the set. There were no masterpieces, so it wasn't like there was this factor that was had this like hard cap on any one of the cards, just driving down, just putting these like putting a downward trajectory on a lot of these cards just right from the start. And it was just packed with a lot of powerful cards, and a lot of which were used in the Pro Tour and kind of defined the Pro Tour. When you think about it, Karn, Teferi, and Chain Whirler were pretty much the storyline of the entire Pro Tour. And when you have all three of those cards in one set, that's already being opened as quickly as it can be, purchased. But, still, there's still supply issues. So, it really, that was just kind of one factor. The other factor, and especially that is being brought up in chat, is we can kind of expect this these trends, spilling over into each Pro Tour coming, as they come up, pretty much for as long as they keep the schedule, is that they move that Pro Tour, further back a few more weeks out from the release. So it just gives a long time for results to be logged and, pros to look, look at the meta and see what's going on. Since they've made that change, not a lot of, you don't see like a brand new archetype. It's pretty much like what's going on the MTGO 5-0 finishes and the SCG, events. So, they pretty much just take what's already out there, tweak it a little bit, and bring it to a Pro Tour. Red Black Aggro, that was pretty much like the entire top eight, was already a deck that was putting up very good results prior to the Pro Tour. So that trend is definitely something we're going to see carry on from Pro Tour to Pro Tour. And I think the shift to there's going to be a lot of increases from the Pro Tour. I think that's going to be shifted to the pre-order prices of a set, at least for sets that I don't believe have masterpieces. Because like when you do have masterpieces, and they said that they're going to do this in the future, I don't know when, you know, it could be very sporadic, but you know, at least masterpieces have that hard cap and just kind of force this downward trajectory on a lot of cards. But that does still create opportunities at a Pro Tour, even if there's masterpieces. So if like a card, you know, normally a rare, you know, such as like Jade Light Ranger or something like that, that is really good, but ends up still being like a dollar or two, that still does create a lot of opportunity, even at the Pro Tour, even if there's masterpieces. But we just didn't see that this time. And if that's going to continue to be the case, I think in those instances, there's just not going to be a super eventful Pro Tour.
Yeah. And, you know, again, there was a variety, there's a confluence of factors this time around that sort of, you know, caused it to kind of go the way that it did. And some of those we were kind of anticipating, kind of predicted. So yeah, it was still a good event. And, you know, it was still kind of exciting and interesting. And I don't think Chain Whirler is going to get banned or anything like that, but what didn't end up being a whole lot of actionables. But yeah, I think, Chaz, I think we should talk about what the people have been asking us, because there were some good questions, some relevant things definitely that have been going on recently. So we can just jump into that.
Yeah. So we had a couple questions here. So Morph Willbender, do you guys agree that the general consensus that of power is due for an increase? Anything relevant about, and then, you know, it's a two-part question, and then anything relevant about the Chinese dual decks that we should pay attention to?
So I'll start here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do I think power is due for an increase? I think power is going to increase. Okay, so this is the way that I view power. Power is kind of in the realm of the one percenters in Magic. It's not in the world of the average player, the average tournament grinder, the average pro. Really, it's kind of in the highest echelon of, I guess, you know, players and collectors that like to spend a lot of money on these collectibles. So it kind of behaves in its own sort of world. So I don't think that, so a lot of people in the community, the finance community, people in our Discord and in QS and other elsewhere think that there's going to be this natural response. Power is going to have this natural response to everything else that's going on with the reserve list, particularly we're seeing dual lands and other things like that. I don't particularly fully agree with that, because these things like dual lands and whatnot, yeah, they're seeing extraordinary gains, but they're also incredibly, incredibly liquid, and they're played far more than power is played. Power is incredibly expensive and has very, very hyper niche playability. So a dual land, even if a dual land is $1,000, someone is going to need a dual land for their EDH deck. They're going to want it, right? There's the demand. The demand differential is pretty high when it comes to power. Now, power is still great. It's still considered, you know, the sort of the holy grail of collectibles and Magic. But I don't think that just because we see a lot of growth in one sector means that that automatically means power is due for this natural spike to go with it, right? That said, I do think that there's going to come a point where power is going to sort of naturally start to slide up. But typically what happens with power is there's an outside influencer, whether that be an SCG or whether that be a group of collectors, or somebody kind of comes in and shakes the market up a little bit, and then there's a response. It typically doesn't happen from a sort of a swell of player demand and other kind of player factors and just general investors. And I mean, power really is its own segment. So yes, I think the power is going to continue to slowly go up over time. No, I do not necessarily believe that just because we're seeing this crazy market growth in the older stuff, in reserve lists, in vintage, and vintage. When I say vintage, I mean like dual lands and whatnot. That does not equate to power just suddenly having a spike as well. That's my position on that. What about you, Jess?
I saw the comments in Discord about, I believe it was from Stu, that the increase in duels, there's going to be a cap on the increase of duels because it would be more lucrative to sell off the duels and turn that, you know, into power. While I think that can occur, I mean, I would still rather be holding a ton of dual lands. Like, I don't see, like, on a day-to-day basis, like, who, you know, maybe one out of 20 people, if that's might even be generous, is looking for, you know, to acquire power. I've, you know, the just the sheer demand of dual lands alone vastly outweighs power. And I wouldn't really be looking to trade up into power if I can steadily hold a you know, an asset that's as liquid as duels. I mean, I think, like, maybe a certain percentage of folks are doing that, but I don't see that being a hard cap on dual lands. Now, I do think that eventually there's going to be price points that certain dual lands can't break, you know, unless the dual lands that are, you know, disproportionate. Like, if Underground Sea gets to 1,000, like, there's still going to be a percentage of, you know, back when it was, I don't know, you know, a few years ago, whatever price point it was at then, which, let's just say for argument's sake, 600. Like, I don't think plateau, there still has to be a percentage disproportion to, like, how expensive a Underground Sea is and how expensive a plateau is. Like, I don't think there's a price point that will, I just don't see, like, $500 plateaus unless Underground Sea can get to, like, 2,000. So I think we're a while, like, a ways off from that point. But I still don't think that, you know, folks trading up into power puts a hard stop on the increased growth of duels.
No, and I mean, I agree with you. I would much rather be holding duels than moving them into power, unless you're a collector or you're wanting to do, I guess, if you're wanting to just invest in something for super long term, which is always what power is good for. But I don't see this, I don't see that how the dual lands and some of this other reserve list stuff is directly correlated to power in the sense that, well, because these things go up, now power has to go up at some kind of, like, equal measure. I don't see that, simply because power is just way too expensive. It's just not in the same class. And I get it. Yeah, $1,000 Underground Sea is going to be crazy, but it's not a Lotus. You know what I mean?
I just think, as, you know, if we evaluate those cards as game pieces of, like, it, of cards that you actually, that have a value outside of just their price point, like, you play these cards on a regular basis, I still think duels wins out, like, 10, you know, 9 out of 10 times, probably more. I mean, the amount of demand I would see for a specific dual land, and that's any dual land at this point, like, I can't even quantify how many posts I would see, or how many, like, you go into an LGS or you even see in, like, buy, sell, trade threads or anything like that, that are looking for dual lands proportionate to how many times people are looking for power. I think it would have to be, I mean, I'm giving, like, 10, probably maybe even 20 to 1. Like, there's just so much more utility and so much value from playing the card, you know, such as a dual land, rather than power, like, acquiring power. So I don't know. I think if there's still going to be a huge amount of investment, I would still think it's going to be in dual lands rather than power putting a hard stop on that. All you, Tark.
What else we have here? What are the comments here? Oh, Jeremy, Jeremy actually want to come on. I thought you were going to type in your rebuttal here.
I mean, I feel pretty energetic this morning, so.
Yeah, I mean, we don't usually do that, but if you want, we can do
sure.
It.
Sure. Why not? All right, Jeremy. I guess we have a spur of the moment special guest. So let's go. There you go.
Hello.
You're all set, Jeremy.
Jeremy.
Okay.
Okay.
All
right. I guess we don't. I guess we don't have a spontaneous guest. All right. So that's where I'm at. I think Chaz, you kind of sound similar. I agree with you as well. Like, I just, dual lands are much more liquid. It's hard to move, and I understand that people, like, power is still cool, right? And it's, people are still going to think, oh wow, I can trade up into a piece of power. But the utility it has for the average player is just not there, like a dual land. It's just not. There's going to be more people that are going to be willing to go, oh, how can I scrounge out $800 to try and get an Underground Sea, than they are to go, hey, how do we how can I scrounge up enough dual lands so that I can trade up into a Mox?
All right, Jeremy, what's up, bud?
Hello.
Let me see if this works for now. Jeremy? Okay, well we'll try to see if Jeremy can break out of the mute zone. But Guillaume actually asked a really good question. Like, how is a duel useful to a casual player? I mean basically anything, right? Like ADH for sure. Just anything casual. I mean, I think just overall, like, it has more value than, you know, a mox that you're going to, or a, you know, a piece of power that you're going to keep in a jewel case or whatever, what have you, and just like put in a safe somewhere or something. I don't know. You're not going to be like, yes, you own it, but you're not going to be extracting the value of this is something that I use for the game, like as a game piece.
Right. And honestly, I mean, I just look at the Facebook groups that I see and the demand for duel and the buy sell groups that I frequent, which I don't frequent all of them, but I frequent many of them. And just the general demand that I see, people want duels. They always want a duel and they don't always want a mox or a lotus, you know?
Yeah. So the other question was, is there anything from the Chinese duel decks we should pay attention to? I think actually a really good, answer to that question, even just from our own insiders, Verscott. I think the exclusive Chinese Planeswalker decks will have a similar trajectory demand that is anime Chandra. Caveat, though, the Chinese walkers are much better and the art isn't anime. I mean, okay, so, I mean, I looked through the deck list. There doesn't seem to be anything, you know, crazy that stands out at me. And honestly, I didn't even know that they were going to be released in the U.S. or, you know, outside of those regions. But, you know, it's something to look at. Like, it's something that you could keep tabs on, but I don't really think there's going to be that much of a demand. I mean, it should be there's going to be some demand there, but I think we're going to have to wait a pretty long time for there to start, you know, the demand for, well, this is kind of a limited thing. They didn't release, you know, they only release X amount. This is this kind of like regional thing. They don't release this product all too often. So I think there's going to have to be like some time there. Other than that, like, yeah, the walkers are pretty interesting. They are definitely unique, but I don't know if there's going to be like, we have to like acquire this immediately.
Hey guys, how's it going?
What's up, Jeremy?
Hey.
I literally had a call in on my phone. It's like a radio show. The microphone wasn't working. It's about time. We've had you guys on so many times, I figured I'd jump in.
Well, good to have you, bud.
Yeah, what's, man?
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. So, Chaz, I agree with you when you say that there is a 20 times demand in duels versus unlimited power. I think you're completely correct about that.
Yeah.
However, there's like over 200,000 revised duel lands out there, and there's not that much power out there. So even if you're seeing a demand of 20 times the amount of people buying an Underground Sea every week, you just need 5% of the population that's buying dual lands to buy power, and those prices are going to continue to go up.
Yeah, I that's definitely a good point. And I wasn't discounting the small fraction of the demand that is there for power. But I think, I guess if we go back to the question, it's the question was.
So where's the correlation between,
wait, is it due for an increase because
going up?
I think
I don't think that there's a correlation between the reserve list spikes and the dual land growth and power going up as a result of that market shift. I don't think that there's a direct correlation.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. And I don't think the increase,
I do think they're mutually exclusive. I think they're mutually exclusive. I don't think that power is. I don't think power has to go up.
I got that backwards. I also don't think the power increasing, because I think, you know, again, this question was coming from, you know, Stu and everyone having this discussion earlier in the Discord, that we can't see these price points on dual lands because eventually folks are just going to use those price points to trade up into duels. I still don't see a larger percentage of folks doing that rather than continuing to invest in dual lands. And I don't think that puts a hard cap on dual lands. I think the only cap that we see is the proportionate amount of Underground Sea is X amount. Plateau can still increase as a proportionate amount to that, but it's going to be harder for those lesser duels to hit a price point just because of, you know, where they are and kind of that hierarchy and, you know, how often they're played, et cetera.
You just threw in like three questions there. Which one do you want me to answer?
No. I was saying that going back to the original question, that's kind of how I was answering it. But I do agree that what you said, that you only need a small fraction of a percentage of folks to want to buy power for that to increase also. But I think like we were trying to answer it from the other side of it of power doesn't, I don't think, puts a hard cap on the increase of duels, because then folks are going to take duels and then trade up into power. Like, I don't see a ton of people doing that.
Yeah, but you're also not at Grand Prix. Like a lot of the guys that I talk with that like we record with are at every single Grand Prix every week. And when you see duels go up every week, there's a lot of players that are just like, yeah, I'll get in a vintage, or I've always wanted to own a Moxen, and they just trade off extra duels towards the Moxen. The other thing is, shops wouldn't be raising buy prices on power if they weren't selling it at even higher prices every time. There is a significant amount of people at Grand Prix that buy power, put it in a safe, and wait a couple months for a pretty good return, which has been accelerated by reserve list fever, especially this last couple months. That mindset has definitely happened a lot more at Grand Prix, where you can just put a HP piece of power for just a ludicrous sum, even higher than what it's selling for online. And a lot of players are stuck in that mentality of, oh, it's got to go up, and they buy in. But you're also seeing a lot of shop owners and vendors, especially at a Grand Prix level, that can't keep this stuff in stock, and they have to keep adjusting their buy price up because they keep selling out at whatever the previous price was. For example, we've seen Unlimited Lotus jump from $2,800 to $3,000 for an HP copy on site in January. It trended up towards $3,200, $3,300 in March, and now it's at anywhere between $3,600 and $3,800. And that's all because people know that if they have a booth, they can pay $100, $200 less for a Lotus, and then either get a ton of free value in someone trading into that Lotus, or they just keep making $100 to $200. And they have to keep paying more because a lot of times someone will shop a Lotus around and they'll just sell it to the highest person. So if you're vendor A and you're offering $2,800 and vendor B gets the Lotus for $2,850, next time you're going to offer $2,850 or $2,900 to get that Lotus in, if you know it'll sell for whatever the new price is, or if you can flip it fast enough. And we saw this last time when Modern spiked too, is people were able to just flip power at an obscene rate for only $50 to $100 more. And then people caught on with market trends and power went up like crazy. And you're starting to see this again with a lot of the LP unsigned Moxen, and specifically Lotus, just because it's the most iconic card. So everybody's shifting their buy price up to get them in, make $100 to $200 and move on. But when you have to shift your buy price up every time, you also have to shift what you're selling that card for as well. And it's not like a lot of people are willing to put the fees or take fees or a loss on a Lotus, for example, because TCG player now only takes up to $50 if you sell a Lotus. But why deal with TCG player and waiting for your money or eBay or anything that could possibly go wrong if you can just put it out of the booth, sell it, get that cash back, and just keep doing that all day?
Yeah, I mean, you have a very good perspective since you come from the GP, you know, the GP circuit, and you know, Chaz and I aren't on the ground level like that. So that's really valuable input. And I guess two questions are, first, are you seeing at the GP level, what you're saying is you are seeing right now an increase in demand in duels that leads you to believe that they could spike similarly to how we've seen, I'm sorry, did I say duels? I meant power.
Yeah. And well, how we saw this spike with duels too.
Right. So you are seeing similar behavior at the GP level. And then two, do you think that there is a direct market correlation? Like, okay, when we see these kind of reserve list spikes happen, there is a correlation that it's going to bleed into power, right? So yes. I guess that's two pronged question, right? So first, are you seeing it happen now to power at the GP level? And then two, do you think there's a direct correlation?
I think there's a direct correlation between duels and power, and I've definitely seen it happen at the GP level. I talked about on Cartel, I'm not plugging too much, don't worry. and then I was like, hey, power is going to go up. And I'm like, look, I'm going to go fly to, and I know Tarkin might have seen this, but I flew to like 17 cities in 4 days just to buy power. That's all I did, was fly around the US and a couple of countries and buy power. My reasoning being, hey, you know, this might go up. And it's not like I was buying it from the market. I was offering like players who had had it for a while that were thinking about getting out. So I took cards that weren't even on the market and then essentially put them in a little safe or something. Or at least that was the plan, was I'll buy power, I'll wait a couple months, it'll go up. And you could argue that I'm artificially inflating demand, but I, you know, I'm not selling it on TCG, so you're not getting sales data. But what happened was I brought it to like 5 GPs in a row. I brought it to Dallas, to Birmingham, to Toronto, to DC, to somewhere else. And people were just like, oh, you have power. How much do you want? And I'm like, oh, 50% above whatever the lowest one online is. And they're like, sure. And so what happened was my position on power actually sold out before I thought it would. And a lot of people, and we argued about this a while ago, but a lot of people are just selling into the hype and they're happy to take their 20% profit and reinvest and all that. And, you know, like buying plane tickets to buy power isn't exactly cheap. So you're starting to see more and more people sell power into this spiking market, and it's not slowing down demand at all. I sold like 12 sets of power in a month, averaged out. It was like 100 pieces or something like that. And I was asking above market price on every single one, and people just did not care. And a lot of the times they traded in dual lands for those cards, which means that it was even easier to get a profit on that when they're giving up even more value to get those cards in, but they're so confident. I mean, we have QS insiders that like approach me at Dallas, I want to say. Yeah, definitely Dallas. And they're just like, here's a stack of dual lands. How many Moxen can I get for this? And it's like, well, I'll take all your duels at 10% off TCG or whatever. And they're like, I don't care. I want power. And you're starting to see runs on power, essentially. And I think Stu's got the right mindset of, if you see something that looks like the old market price, not necessarily buy it out, but make the wise investment choice, because you're seeing ABU have near mint Moxen at 2,700 now, which 2 months ago, I think they had data at like 1,600-1,700 for the same Moxen. So it's like a little rambling, but it's just crazy on the amount of demand that you're seeing for power at both a GP level and an online level, where it's not necessarily a bubble, but people seem to think that like it's the best time to get in on power is now based on 25 years of data. But I think the big thing when you look at investing in Magic as a whole is past data doesn't predict future results. And I think that's something that a lot of people get caught up in. So I would recommend, like, if you've been holding on to some of this stuff, take the profit now and then reinvest later in the year when cards go down again. Because I think Ed nailed it on the head the other day. A lot of this stuff is going to come out of the woodworks at Vegas. A lot of people, that's their only GP for the year. That's where they go and they sell a bunch of stuff when they make bad financial decisions gambling all weekend. Because you see this every time in Vegas, is people gamble too much. They don't want to tell the wife and they sell a couple cards that they also didn't disclose how much they paid. So you're going to see a lot more junk reserve list cards come out of the woodwork. You're going to see a lot of high-end stuff enter the system again, and we're going to see prices gradually trend down back into December, at which point, as Tarkin knows, it's a perfect time to buy back in. So it's just the amount of duels and the amount of power, the volatility, or not the volatility, the volume of this stuff is driving the market. The fact that you can basically pay whatever on a piece of power or a dual land and get whatever you want for it. We're seeing TCG be higher than GP pricing or even competitor pricing by 15 to 20% on dual lands, and definitely about even on power, and people are still paying ludicrous amounts. So if you're a vendor right now, if you're someone who even sells cards, as a lot of the insiders have found out through the Discord channel, your volume's probably at an all-time high, especially in May and definitely into June. And so you're willing to pay more to acquire these cards because you know you can flip them right away on TCG or any other avenue of sale. So like, the name of the game here isn't profit margins necessarily, it's volume. And if you can sell 4 Underground Seas every week and make a couple $100 that way, you're going to keep trying to get more in to sell them again. It's just interesting. But I think the volume is the biggest thing, is that people see, oh, I can buy this for whatever because it's just going to go up in a week and I can sell it for more.
So I guess, so relating to the original question, do you believe that we're going to see the same type of drastic spike that we saw in power that we saw in reserve list and dual lands past?
I would argue that we're already seeing it. I mean, if you look at buy prices, QS does a really good job of scraping data, but it can't scrape data at GPs. But
right. Like, I think it is more prevalent at on a GP level, because I think you're right, because when you look at a lot of the stock increase, like all the if you look at all the the websites that do track this data, you don't see a large percentage of increases all too often, especially on the on this power, because of some of the stuff that Jeremy was talking about. But I was just trying. We were just trying to answer from, I guess, the lens of the question. Again, if this is all just on a GP level, I don't think, you know, yes, there's going to be this bubble, but I don't think, I think that from the top,
how much is that? How much is that going to
the power? I think has a chance to dip more of a higher percentage quicker than dual lands stopping their upward trajectory, right? So just because I think there's more of a demand in these other, the dual lands as game pieces, more than, you know, they'll continue to flip them into power, but I think the bubble on power doesn't directly cause the dual lands to stop growing.
I think dual lands cool off faster than power does, especially second half of this year. I think we're at the highest price point of demand of duels, and I think that if you look at how much power is even left on the market, it's starting to become just like high-end sealed product or truly rare cards, not like a random Japanese foil that basically everyone can get a hold of now.
Sure.
You can basically set the price on power now, and it'll sell for that. But the amount of duels coming out of the woodwork, that's going to cool off faster, in my opinion, than power. I think we see easily like $2,000, $2,500 Moxen by the end of the year. And I don't think Underground Sea goes above 800 for LP this year. Because it's always been three Underground Seas for a Moxen. And like, obviously that relates back into this whole question that you guys asked at the beginning of the cast. But I think that as more and more people finally try to finish what they've wanted, and you have these established players that already have duels, they don't really care what they're paying for power. I mean, as you guys are aware, there's a lot of high-end collectors out there, especially that make themselves known online, that just, they don't really care what they're paying. They just want the card. You can ask whatever you want. You're seeing that a lot with Chaos Orb, for an example. You can get like 4,000 US for an Alpha Chaos Orb right now in like not great condition. You can get 3,000 for a beta one. And you're going to start seeing that a lot with unlimited power too, where it's going to be concentrated in the hands of a couple people that have it available. They can basically ask whatever they want, but there's always going to be Binder Grinder McGee or whatever that has revised duels for sale, but not everyone has power.
You don't think a revised LP UC will break 1,000 by the end of the year?
No,
or
I think it doesn't.
I don't think so. I agree with Jeremy. I don't think that's going to happen either. Yeah, I agree.
You don't think
with
it breaks 800?
No. And the reason why is you look at companies like 95MTG that have done a fantastic job of establishing themselves in the US scene. And like, obviously, they have a good relationship with like Haruya and all that. And Haruya is paying very aggressively on dual lands right now. They're paying 600 and something dollars for a Nearman Underground Sea. But the population of Japan's only so big. And like we saw during the financial crisis, when duels and power were funneled over to Europe, you're starting to see duels be funneled over to Japan. However, duels are cheaper in Europe right now than they are in America, and they're barely cheap. They're more expensive in Japan, but not by an insane margin. So that arbitrage door is starting to close. Once that door closes making money selling duels to Japan, duels are going to go down as people won't be able to pay as high of numbers until next year when this cycle starts all over again. But if you look at what happened with the European market, and like that's why I flew over to Birmingham. It was like MTG Finance is half about Humble Brag Stories, right? So all the duels over there were like 60 pounds, 60 euros for Savannah and Scrublands. So you had tons of people, including me, that's like, yeah, I'll spend $20,000 on Savannahs and fly them back to the States and make $20 a land. And then they spiked anyway, so they made more money. But now you're seeing Europe funnel duels and reserveless cards to America, where reserveless cards are highest at America now. So that door is closing, because you can still buy Helm of Obedience for basically nothing over in Europe, and it's still an inane amount of money over in the States, or Treachery, or any of the stuff that like basically Reddit is trying to buy out. But you won't see duels spike any higher, because they finally concentrated from moving to Europe to America to Japan versus Japan to America or Japan to Europe. Because Japan is not the same size as the European market. It's not the same size as the American market. You can only send so many Underground Seas over there. And that's one expensive plane ticket to get over there to sell those seas. before people start cooling off, or they have enough, or Haruya says, you know what, we have a couple hundred underground seas, we're good for now. But yeah, you're not going to see that with power, because power is more expensive in Europe right now. America is now catching up, and they were already obscene in Japan. So America with power is now catching up to the old school market in Europe, but it's also catching up to the premium that any Magic card has in Japan if it's older than when it was printed in Japanese and like Visions or something. So anything older than Visions in Japan carries a premium because they had to import everything. Same thing with Europe. Yeah. So they sucked out all the power, and it's spiking in Europe, and it's already spiked in Japan. That's why there's a ton of Japanese vendors at all these American Grand Prix, because they have an easy out for power overseas. And America is finally going, wait a second, it's more expensive in Europe, it's more expensive in Japan, why don't we buy out the power or buy a couple pieces in the States, and then it pays for an international trip, or it helps pay for you for your GP vending booth that costs, you know, like $10,000 for a weekend or whatever. So America is now catching up on the power market, whereas we're number one right now, or number two on dual lands. So it's basically a triangle when it comes to supply and demand, and we're last right now on power. So we have to catch up to either a point where it's close to the European market, which is already insane, or closer to the Japanese power market, which is just ludicrous right now.
Yeah, I mean,
if you can get like 1 million yen for a Lotus or whatever, and Lotuses are only 700,000 yen over here, that's a pretty good profit margin.
Yeah.
And so I'm pretty confident that power is going to keep going up as more and more vendors, and they already know this because I've talked with basically all of them, you just buy power over here, you bring it overseas, you make some free money, everybody wins. And now you're starting to see the effects of, oh, America is drying up because it's literally free money on the table. And Tarkin's very good at arbitrage, and he's been on top of that for a while. And a lot more people are starting to look at power as, oh, how much space does it take to put two whole mocks in a binder when I fly overseas? Nothing at all. And that's why. I think it's just that these different markets for dual lands and power are finally converging. And as people shuffle cards around continents, prices are going to adjust accordingly. And sorry for just literally taking over the conversation, but that's just something I see.
No. It's very good insight. We definitely appreciate that. Yeah. Absolutely. No,
you have a unique and valuable perspective in that you're guiding GP. And you know, that's something that that's experience that we don't have. So it's super valuable, man. So and good that you finally had a chance to come on. We get to gab a little bit.
Yeah, definitely appreciate that. I think the question was very thoroughly answered. So we appreciate the questions. Jeremy, thank you so much. I will follow up with you. Definitely going to have you come on soon. Like,
no problem. Have
more,
a good one, guys.
Formal capacity. Yeah.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Take it easy.
Bye.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I'm sorry. We're not going to do that to you, Jerry, but I'm sorry. That's Efren, you just made me laugh.
Oh, my God. This Discord is amazing.
No, we're not gonna do that. That was actually very valuable.
Yeah,
Jeremy, appreciate it, man. Seriously, you really do have a super unique and valuable perspective that we don't have. So I think that's a good balance to where we're coming from, and the GP circuit is like the most important. I think one of the most important takeaways from that is that there is this whole sort of vendor. There's this whole market behavior that we don't get exposure to because it's not on TCG Player. It's not on eBay. Right. It doesn't succumb to fees. So it's sort of like a second layer of the market that.
Yeah,
that,
it's not easily tracked on the normal outlets either. Right. Yeah. Go
but
ahead.
A guy like Jeremy has that data. I mean, he's in it. That's what he's doing. So, yeah.
You've also popped into Discord on numerous occasions to kind of give anecdotes like that too, because you're tapped into that as well, because you also travel quite often and kind of see those trends.
Yeah, yeah. I've been to some foreign events too. So, it's interesting. It's very interesting stuff. But Jeremy, thanks a lot, man. And I think we should. I'm gonna actually have to dip here in just a minute, so we should probably carry on. I think that really quick, referring to the Chinese dual decks. The only reason why my ears perk up when I hear about exclusive foreign product is because you know, if the print runs on that are really low and it's tailored towards a different market, sometimes those cards can end up becoming pretty collectible. Yeah. I don't know about this one. It sounds like the market is, you know, it sounds like the supply isn't super low and the cards don't seem particularly that interesting. Granted, I haven't really dug into them, but I haven't heard a lot of hype or how they're really cool. So honestly, they're just kind of like another set of planeswalkers that we don't be, we're not able to play with, but they are. So it's kind of like, eh, whatever.
Yeah. You know? I've honestly not, I mean, just being super transparent, as always, I really haven't had the time to sit down and see where these possibly could go. My guess is that the answers that, you know, other insiders have provided are pretty much on track. We could expect somewhat similar of a trajectory, but I actually think it might take a bit longer to get there, only because I actually believe that that particular product was like pretty, it didn't have a very large print run. I feel like this, even though it, you know, I'll bet it could still be small, it's still a lot larger, you know, in terms of today's supply, you know, when we're comparing it to something that's, I don't know how old already, but
yeah,
you know, it's definitely something to watch. But again, I just have not had the time to really look into that closely.
Really quick, Chaz, because I have to go, so I'm gonna give you guys my picks for the week really fast. I'm gonna rattle them off. I like my reserve list pick this week is going to be Morphling, kind of because we have the new white Ling in Battle Bond. I think people are going to be kind of excited about that. And Morphling is a classic. It's the first one. It's reserve list. It's only about $14. I actually think Morphling, it could easily be a $25 card down the road. I don't think it's going to jump tomorrow, but I like Morphling at around 13, 14 bucks. My other pick is actually if you can get Mox Ambers for around $6, and if they tank that low, which I suspect they probably will at some point once Dominaria hits its lows, I would be picking up Mox Ambers all day long at $6. I know it sucks right now. The card is not very good, but that's the type of card that's I think it will only get better over time, and it's a Mox. Most of the Moxes that are similar are, I mean, they're about at least $15 that have similar abilities, right? So I think Mox Amber, there's no reason why Mox Amber won't long-term be a $15 card. So I love it at around $6. I think that, the last one I had was a foil. It was Sosuke, son of Sashiro. This is from Champions of Kamigawa. It's a Champions Uncommon, and it's the foil version specifically. This is the snake warrior that gives kind of a pseudo lord. It gives your other snakes +1/+0, and makes your warriors have sort of like a death touch kind of ability. It's only $3 as a foil. The snake deck has a lot of niche demand. There's a lot of people that are into the snake deck, and I think $3 is pretty low for this foil. I could see this being a $6 to $8 foil. And just last note on cards, I've been seeing Lightning Greaves sell at around $10. This card just flies off the shelf. I know there's a million copies of them, but they're all about $3 or $4. I'm not saying to go buy them up now, but I think they're great for trades, and if you can pick them up at like $3 or even less, which will probably be hard, but they're super liquid and they do sell for around $10. I know people are selling them through TCG Direct for $10, so Lightning Greaves are pretty good pickups. I'm not going to say that I'm picking that as something that's going to spike or move up anytime soon, but they're just very, very liquid, and you can usually trade them for probably a premium because, as I said, the direct sales are going for about 10. So, Chaz, that's it for me. I've got to run, but I want to put my picks out there. This was an awesome conversation. Thanks a lot, Jeremy, for coming on, and I'll see you guys later.
Yep, take care, Tark. All right, that leaves me to wrap things up. So if you can actually believe it, we're coming up on a year for the release of Commander 2017. So just prefacing that from the two cards that I am going to enter into the QS tracker, again, brought to us by Guillaume. Awesome, you know, it's so awesome that we have that data. Does a really good job. Mine for this week are going to be Edgar Markov and the Ur-Dragon. Two pretty very popular commanders from those from that installment of the Commander series. And again, we're already coming up on a year. I know it's kind of crazy to believe already, but those two are the most popular out of that cycle, pretty much by far. And they're still, you know, I see them increasing very slightly, but I don't want to, you know, I want to get this entry in now because I don't want to spend more on this, you know, even months from now, as folks are continuing to pick this up, and they're pretty hard to find. on the shelves. Like, I don't even see these much anymore. They usually are discounted. I know folks, especially on the Discord, and I see around, can find these at GameStop as at a discounted price. I you know, that's never around where I am, but I do know folks have you know, personal, or you know, their own kind of data on that. When they kind of just see it, they let us know. You know, we try to track that as much as we can. But so I'm going in on Edgar Markov and the Ur-Dragon, just because of the timing on this. I think it's been enough time from the release that we can start looking at these popular commanders. There was a commander anthology, so anything that was not included in that, and you know, has chances to increase just from that. The ones that were not included in that commander anthology, but certainly this round of commander that's already a year old, and these commanders still have a pretty long way to go from being included into a commander anthology. So I'm looking at those two commanders, especially because of how popular they are. All right, and that is going to wrap up the QS cast for today. We might try to get in one over the weekend, just a flash cast, just to kind of continue talking about some of the subjects that are brought up. But yeah, thanks everyone for tuning in. You can find me on the QS Discord at any time. I'm always around. Just definitely either at me or message me, and I will try to answer anyone's questions or provide any insight or what have you. So that's going to wrap it up for this week. Thanks everyone for tuning in, and we will see you all next time. Berger.